Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
Well, welcome back to the Tony Katz Today show. I am Andrew Langer in for Tony, on Tony Katz Today. He's listening right now. He's going to wonder why I am getting so cluttered and wonder if I'm doing some kind of an impression of Joe Biden. I am not. I am just so flustered that he is able to join us. Tony Katz, the host of the show, how are you doing? How are things in Israel right now?
Well, I'm going to get to what's been happening here in the north as I am in Nahariya, which is north of Haifa. But can we just discuss
Please.
How absolutely wonderful this 9-0 decision is from the Supreme Court? When you've lost Sonia Sotomayor, you have lost in so many ways. And I just, guys, it's good to be with you. It is great to be. I missed the show.
Yes.
This trip has been incredible. I have a lot to share. But just so we're all on the same page, and this isn't for you, right? This isn't for you, Andrew Langer, the great Andrew Langer. Thank you for filling in. This
Always.
Isn't for you. All right, Kitten, Boo Bear, Shmoo, Pookie, this isn't for you. This is for all the people who actually believed that the state of Colorado could utilize some part of the Constitution to decide that the people of Colorado don't have the right to vote for somebody who's okay to be a candidate.
Right.
They decide someone's not good enough, and they think they can utilize, I think it was the 14th Amendment, to
Yes.
take somebody out.
Yes.
If you believed that, not you. You know I'm not talking to you.
I know.
But your friend, your buddy, you have a cousin.
My
if
in-laws.
You believed, if you ever believed that somehow and in some way this could happen, you shouldn't be allowed to drive. You should have your driver's license taken. For the first time ever, if you're somebody who actually believed that a court could decide, well, you're guilty of insurrection, so we're not going to allow you to be on the ballot, even though they were never charged and never adjudicated. If you believe that, all of a sudden, I think there should be a license for procreation. You should not be having children. That's how low people should think of you, and you should think of those people. So at the Thanksgiving table, or any holiday before that, where somebody squawks about Trump and they talk about this, laugh at them for being that ignorant. Andrew had to get it off my chest.
No, that's fine. And I actually did quote your tweet in reaction to this and your comment about Sotomayor, giving you full credit for that as well. You know, the story that I loved from last week, Tony, was this judge in Illinois who threw Trump off the ballot. And the fact that her main purview in Illinois, in being an Illinois judge, was that she was a judge on a traffic court. I mean, that's the, you know, as I said then, you know, you and I have a term for that. It's called chutzpah. You have to have a lot of chutzpah in order to go down that road. But yeah, I mean, listen, Amy Coney Barrett said it best today. The message we should all take away, all of America should take away from this, is that it was a unanimous decision. Very important. We suspected it might happen. I thought that it could be 7-2, 8-1, but hoped and thankful it came true. So this is big stuff. So, Tony, the north of Israel, what's going on?
I will give you the what's going on. So it's fascinating that so I'm in this town called Nahariya, which is north of Haifa, north of actually a place called Akko, which is one of the oldest cities in the world. I was Yeah. actually there today, and the Crusades, the walls that were built to keep people out, it's stunning, right there in the Mediterranean
Wow.
Sea. But I was on a kibbutz today, 1.2 miles from the Lebanon border.
Wow.
And when you are this far north, if you try to look at yourself on, let's say, you know, Apple Maps, right? You got an iPhone, it will tell you you're in Beirut.
Wow.
The government is scrambling signals to not let other people try and geolocate where you're at. It will tell them that you are in Beirut.
Okay.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, The people here are convinced that the only thing surprising is that Hezbollah has not launched a counteroffensive.
Yeah.
They were prepared for it immediately. The mayor of this area, he, an hour after seeing the attacks on October 7th, he initiated the evacuation of these kibbutzim and these other places. He didn't wait for the quote-unquote federal government.
Sure.
He just started doing it because his assumption was Hezbollah was going to respond. Andrew, to a person, whether it's military people, and I got a briefing yesterday from a retired brigadier general, whether it's the people who have served in the IDF and are now either on leave or their time is done, to a person, they all believe that the moment with Hezbollah is coming and the attack will come, and it will be to the tune of, in certain areas, 3,000 rockets a day.
Wow.
Hezbollah has been allowed to amass hundreds of thousands of rockets, and no one here is being shy, man. No one here is being shy, and people have heard me discuss this, that Netanyahu doesn't survive this. This war is over. Netanyahu is gone. The people here, this happened on your watch. You are guilty. How about the idea that we allowed Hezbollah, a proxy of Iran, to amass these hundreds of thousands of rockets? Everything we think of about safety and security and being on top of it, out the window. Yeah. And there's a real rethink going on in Israel right now. But man, are they getting ready? They talked to a surgeon today over at the Western Galilee Medical Center, where they literally have an underground hospital. I'm gonna show you a video of this.
Oh, good.
It's underground. It is bunker style.
Sure.
It's unbelievable. Saying point blank, it's not if, it's when.
Sure. And it's interesting, Tony, because we have audio here. I'm not going to play it for you right now of Kamala Harris demanding the ceasefire. Got Tina Smith. Actually, I want you to you don't need to react to the audio, but Senator Tina Smith, who's the junior senator from Minnesota, was on MSNBC over the weekend and sort of expressing her astonishment that how dare Netanyahu be hell bent on destroying Hamas. I mean, this is, listen, as you talk about it, Netanyahu is in a politically precarious position, but there are some important goals that need to be accomplished, regardless of the politics of them, destroying Hamas being the most important one, isn't it?
There's the people of Israel are united.
Yes.
Now, we've heard that from the beginning, and very often in the world of politics, you're like, look, no one's ever united, right? That's just, that's something you say. That ain't true. Guys, the people of Israel are united, whether it's anecdotal, whether it's polling. They want Hamas gone, finished, erased. Yeah. There might be the ultra-Orthodox who are like, Israel shouldn't even exist. Man, am I disgusted with the ultra-Orthodox and any idea that somehow they shouldn't be doing their part for Israel while they live in Israel. It drives me up a wall. That's another story for another day, and I will get into when I get back. No one cares that the junior senator from Minnesota said a damn thing. No one cares that the vice president of the United States said a damn thing. They flat out don't care at all. They have made the decision that they are going to put an end to Hamas come hell or high water. And it is my only hope that that sticks. But when we talk about, you know, where some of these kinds of trend things go, propaganda things go, here is one that has taken place on my social media feed, of course, on X, at Tony Katz, and I only hope you guys follow there and like there. We're posting things there. The idea that a kibbutz is a settlement, that has shown up a couple times. And I'm going to put an end to this. A kibbutz, I think back in the day, was basically this idea of near communism. Of how these people could, in coming to Israel from all these places, could create a society and thrive. And those early kibbutzes really didn't do so well. And then they changed to this kind of moshav system. Yep. It's called moshav, which was a little more capitalist intensive. But they still have kibbutzes. They just run differently and thought of differently now. Think of them as just small communities. That's what they are. Small communities, mostly self-contained, but they absolutely go to the outside world and are engaged in commerce and trade and everything else. Every kibbutz is on Israeli land.
Yes.
Settlers are conversations about the West Bank. All right, that's a settler. And I don't see it that way because I see it as all the land of Israel. But no one has ever questioned whether a kibbutz is on Israeli land. All kibbutzniks or members of a kibbutz are Israelis on Israeli land. They're not settlers. It's theirs. And anybody who says otherwise should go to hell in a handbasket. Everywhere you turn, there is some kind of maneuvering to make you think that Israel's the problem. Guys, Israel ain't the problem here. Hamas is the problem. Hezbollah's the problem. Iran is the problem. And if we don't support Israel, the problem is going to be ours because it's going to come across our southern border. This, right, we know is fact.
Well, Tony, I before I let you go, you went to the Bring Them Home march from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? Or did you've been watching what was going on there over the weekend?
I was actually heading back from Jerusalem, from the old city, and was able to catch the march. So these marches have been taking place up what's known, you could call it Route 1 or Road 1. Road 1 is how you get from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and it's uphill. And when you talk about capturing Jerusalem during some of the wars after it was taken over, 67, I think it is, that road is the road that the tanks took, and it was not a paved road. It was a very difficult thing to do. So there are these protesters marching up this same roadway, right? Main road that people drive up to get to Jerusalem all the time, to protest, to tell the government to do whatever it takes to get the hostages back. And there's a place in Tel Aviv called Hostage Square.
Yes.
And so these two things were happening. One, it wasn't actually simultaneous. It was one after the other. This hostage conversation has Israelis in a bit of a question. Do you give Hamas whatever it takes to get your people back? Or do you say we don't negotiate with terrorists? In both cases, the people want Hamas gone, no matter what happens. So that's what these protests are. But no one has forgotten about these people. They desperately want them back. The question is, are they even alive? I mean, that's the question. Are these people alive? And no one can guarantee that.
Here, you know something, Tony? I realize I've been remiss. You've been there now for, 5 days? And I have a good buddy who was over there. His wife's with the State Department. I got to introduce you to him. I'm going to introduce you to him offline. But, Tony Katz, thank you, as always, so very much for joining us on your show. I got to thank you for joining your own show. Stay safe, my friend. We will talk to you tomorrow.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Take care. That, of course, was Tony Katz. If you're not following him, you should, at Tony, TonyKatz on Twitter. Follow his travels in Israel. I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. Well, welcome back, everybody. I am Andrew Langer in for Tony Katz today. One of the things we're going to be talking about during this week is the issue of religious freedom. Obviously, we've been not just religious freedom, but you know, and freedom of expression, all kinds of things that are going on here, and we've been talking about it today. Joining me right now is Cece O'Leary. She's with the Southeastern Legal Foundation. Cece, so glad you could join us today. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
So one of the things we've been talking about in terms of the First Amendment and among other things is this issue, and we talked about it late last week as well, is the issue of people putting their thumb on the scale, you know, for one viewpoint over another. We've got stuff going on in Minnesota regarding speech. We have this horrific case out of D.C. of the Blaze reporter being arrested. You guys are dealing with a situation on the campus of the University of New Mexico. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So the Turning Point USA chapter at the University of New Mexico is actually the only conservative recognized chapter on their campus. So they feel this immense responsibility to be a conservative voice for their peers. Unfortunately, this is pretty much a minority viewpoint at this point. And so as part of their mission, they wanted to host Speaker Riley Gaines to come to campus. And she talks about her experience competing against a biological male during her time as a swimmer in college. And now she advocates for the protection of women in sports. So it was a very timely discussion. They submitted their event request. And when the university caught wind of this event, they reached out to the students and informed the students that they would have to have security at the event. And the university gave the students an initial invoice of over $10,000 in security fees and told the students that they would have to foot the bill. Now, I don't know about you, but I certainly couldn't afford something like that when I was in college. And this was a major First Amendment issue, because when they asked the university why the fees would be so excessive, the university said that it assesses these event requests on a case-by-case basis, and it charges these fees based on the individual who is speaking. So that means that the university looked at who was speaking. In this case, it was Riley Gaines. What it is she wanted to say? She wanted to talk about transgenderism and protecting women's sports. And then it proceeded to put up these barriers in the form of fees based on those criteria. So this is blatant viewpoint and content-based discrimination in violation of the First Amendment. So we filed a lawsuit on behalf of these students, as well as the Leadership Institute, which is a nonprofit organization that has been helping these students to promote and get this event off the ground.
You know, let's talk about this, which is this issue of the chilling effect on speech. You know, when you arrest journalists who happen to be in the Capitol on January 6th, when you start to say that you're going to threaten the nonprofit status of religious organizations that don't kowtow to certain kinds of laws, these all have the effect of chilling free speech. It's going to it discourages people from engaging in this kind of behavior down the road. Certainly that case can be made here at the University of New Mexico, can't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the students are hesitant to plan any further events this semester because they don't know what sort of fees are going to attach to their future events. There was another conservative group on campus a few years ago that tried to host a speaker, and they were charged over $8,000 in fees. And yet another group had a drag queen bingo event a few months ago, and not a single security officer was on site. So this all points, again, towards viewpoint discrimination, but it's not clear what the criteria will be for these security fees. And so this Turning Point chapter feels like their hands are tied. They can't proceed with future events because they don't know what kind of fees will be assessed to them and how much they will be expected to pay each time. They just want to engage in their basic right to speak freely on campus.
So theoretically, what they should do is they should do drag queen bingo and have Riley Gaines there and then just not have any drag queens there.
You know, that's a great solution. You know, we didn't need to bring this lawsuit after all. We should have just done that.
I get it. But the bottom line is also, but the thing is, they do that and they run the risk of being sanctioned if they don't have the event that you're going to have. How much of this is dependent upon the fact that the University of New Mexico is a government institution? If it were a private school, would it be different? Talk a little bit about that sort of that differentiation here.
Well, certainly First Amendment rights are much stronger on public campuses. In fact, they're strongest in the university setting. It is a well-settled principle in case law that university is meant to be the marketplace of ideas.
Yes.
And courts consistently uphold students' freedom of speech and the right to not only speak, but also to host speakers that you want to hear from. And so the students here have a very strong claim because, again, this is a public university. They're the only conservatives on campus, so they're in the minority, and the First Amendment is meant to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority. So they have a pretty solid case, and we'll do our best to get this up to the court and hopefully secure them a win.
Well, listen, I'm following you now on Twitter at CCCECE underscore O'Leary. No apostrophe. CC O'Leary, O-L-E-A-R-Y. Before I let you go, what kind of pup is the official Southeastern Legal Foundation office dog?
She is a Labradoodle named Athena. She's named after Athens, Georgia, where my husband went to college at the University of Georgia. So she's big and fluffy and great fun to have around.
That I can hear the grin on your face as a dog dad. I appreciate that greatly. CC O'Leary, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was CC O'Leary. She is with the Southeastern Legal Foundation. That is SLF Liberty, slfliberty.org. Go and check that out. Also, SLF underscore Liberty on the Twitter machine. Go and follow them as well. Listen, when we return, you're going to want to stay tuned for this. We're going to be joined by Pedro Horta. He is a retired CIA case officer, has written a book about the importance of whistleblowers. So please stay tuned for that. I am Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. as you can tell by the fact that sometimes I get a little tongue-tied and sometimes I get a little lost in things, that sometimes I can get a little overwhelmed with life. By the way, I'm Andrew Langer in for Tony Katz today. And one of the things that sometimes happens is if I'm not fortunate enough to have a good producer like the esteemed Carl here who works with me, or Jason who also works with me here on Tony Katz Today, if I'm running my own gear, sometimes I will have problems. Like I will have a full 45-minute interview that I will accidentally not actually record. Such was the case at CPAC with our next guest. His name is Pedro Israel Orta. He's a retired CIA case officer. He was 18 years with CIA. He's the author of a book called The Broken Whistle. He and I have to have a long-form conversation for the lunch hour. If you're up for it, Pedro, because I know, you know, you certainly don't want to talk to me again, but this is a fascinating book. I've now had a chance to read more than a little of it. Talk about why the book, why now, what is broken in terms of the CIA and whistleblowing?
Thank you for having me on the show, Andrew. It was a pleasure. Thankfully, it was only about 3 minutes of no recording in CPAC. Caught that early.
Oh, yes.
Why now? The rule of law matters. And at the end of the day, the main message of this book is weaponized government power poses a tyrannical threat to our constitutional republic. And something must be done to rein in these continued and increasing abuses of authority within our federal government, particularly in the national security establishment that has vast powers that can be weaponized. And if there is no oversight to rein in that weaponization of power, it can really just spiral out of control and become a constitutional threat.
Right. I mean, you know, and the thing is, right, we need our spies. And I know that's not the correct term of art, but I'm going to use it anyway for the purpose of a discussion. We need folks who are engaged in the business of collecting information from both our friends and our enemies, or enemies and our friends. We need to have a better understanding as to what's going on in the world. Right. There's the quote at CIA headquarters, "And the truth shall set you free or make you free." We need to know those things. But there has to be some measure of oversight to ensure that these secret agents don't devolve into another form of tyranny. Talk about the need for that oversight.
Well, historically, what we have seen is we go through cycles. What we're seeing today actually happened much the same in the 50s, 60s, and even into the early 70s. And what happened was a mechanism was put in place to rein in these types of abuses. We can go back to the Church Committee and look at what it did. And essentially what happened was our separation of powers, the executive branch comprised of the president and his executive departments, all the government agencies, departments, cabinets, so forth, the legislature at the federal level, we're talking Congress, the House, and the Senate, and then the judiciary, the court systems, the federal court systems. Well, with the Church Committee, what happened was is Congress initiated an oversight mechanism called the Senate Select Committee of Intelligence and the House Permanent Select Committee of Intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
But there's also more. There's also a House government functions for other branches of government, Treasury, Attorney General, FBI, so forth. Congress has the power of the purse, the ability to fund and defund government programs, the executive branch. It also has the power to say yay or nay to certain government programs. And the oversight mechanism initiated in the mid-70s was very effective. It did not neuter or render the intelligence community powerless. It just simply reined in significant abuses of power,
right,
that were violating basically our constitutional principles. But what has happened through the years is two things. One, technology has increased and a lot of powers have been given to these agencies. And on the second side of that is the lack of effective congressional oversight. So how do we get back to a point where we can do oversight again effectively and begin to rein in these abuses is the question that needs to be answered. And partly the reason why we're not seeing that done is because what has happened is Congress has failed to do that oversight and has pretty much turned a blind eye and has been a participant in the abuses of power by the executive branch.
It's important stuff, certainly. So let's talk about the book, The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. You know, what's been the reaction of the book there, Pedro?
Well, as you can imagine, the liberals to a degree hate it because it exposes abuses of the deep state. But people on the right love it because it exposes those abuses. So getting mixed reactions. But looking at the literary reviewers, it actually recently won an award from Literary Titan. They gave it 5 stars and rated it very well, and rightly so, because I ensured that this book went through a rigorous editorial process to make sure that, you know, the story of it flowed, and not only flowed, but that it would be tight. I made sure that it's devoid of all conspiratorial nonsense. It's very factual with what I saw firsthand, what I witnessed, or what I was aware of from a firsthand perspective. And at the same time, it's very well sourced with 150 citations. And, you know, the reader will get a glimpse of what it's really like working for the CIA, both at headquarters and in the field, whether a more of a traditional station or a war zone station. And at the same time, they will see how these deep state actors, national security establishment bureaucracy, will violate basically their constitutional oath, abuse their powers, particularly in EEO matters and whistleblower laws. The reality is, my case proved that post-Snowden, all talk about there being whistleblower protections, there really aren't any. Because you can have all the laws saying that you're protected, but if those laws are not properly enforced, those laws are basically moot.
Yeah. No, it is, and it is just so vital that we've seen this, Pedro, haven't we? What happens when we don't? You know something. One of the things you and I talked about in our conversation is the issue of the oversight folks who just want to go along to get along. I mean, there's the problem of them being in charge, the national security community being in charge of their security clearances, but also so many of them are just so enamored of the fact that they have this special relationship with the intelligence world that they're not doing proper oversight. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, the way this oversight works is Congress is dependent on the intelligence community to provide them with information. And what I saw firsthand was how they will spin the narrative, tweak things, sugarcoat things, and slow roll things, where Congress at times doesn't get the whole truth. The reality is, even the president may not necessarily know everything that's going on in these intelligence communities, as we recently heard from the New York Times articles, where apparently President Trump wasn't completely told the whole truth and everything that was being done with Ukraine and Russia. That is a significant part of the problem in being able to find some oversight mechanisms here. And that's where Congress is going to have to step it up and find a way to use their leverage to ensure that the information they get is timely, is accurate, and if they dig deeper to get more answers, that they don't get steamrolled or slow rolled and not seeing a response. And one example is particularly how, in the case of Brennan, abusing his powers, going after a whistleblower who had reported to the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community, they actually caught the communications in the CIA system because yeah. It's the same system with the ICID and the CIA. And it was not classified. Senator Grassley stayed on it for 3 years.
Wow.
Memos that were classified secret because they didn't want the embarrassment to become public were held back and did not become public. Well, it was almost 3.5 years.
Wow.
And there's news articles on that, and it's actually in Grassley's judiciary page.
That is amazing. Listen, Pedro, we have to leave it there. The book is Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, also at Pedro Israel Orta, O-R-T-A, PedroIsraelOrta.com. Pedro, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Andrew. God bless you.
Listen, when we return, I'm going to play for you the dumbest Army National Guard commercial ever and talk about it, why I was so offended by it. I'm Andrew Langer. This is Tony Katz Today. So I saw Dune Part 2 over the weekend. And listen, it's not a question of whether or not I can recommend it to everybody. You know, if you read the books, as I read several of them, especially the first one, and you liked the book, the first one, and you may have seen the movie in the 80s and you wish it had been done better and you saw Dune Part 1 and you like that, then go see Dune Part 2. Don't go see it without seeing Part 1. I also would recommend having read a synopsis of the book just so you understand a little bit more about what's going on, because it could be a little tough to figure out. I was explaining to the aforementioned Jerry Rogers. Anyway, obviously, I know we have many listeners out there who used to go to the movies when you would go and you would get a newsreel and a short subject and a cereal and a cartoon and you get all kinds of things. Those went away, and for a while you would just see trailers. And then you might see trailers and some kind of thing about going and buying some kind of soft drink and popcorn out in the lobby. Well, now you get a lot of ads before 10 minutes of ads before you get even to the trailers. Then you get, 25 minutes of trailers, and then you get to the movie. And Dune already has a really long running time, 2 hours and 45 minutes. It's a lot. There's nothing after the credits, so you can leave right when the credits start. I liked it. As I said, beautiful, beautiful film. And a faithful reproduction of Frank Herbert's book. But I'm sitting there, and there's an ad at the beginning for the National Guard. Now, understand, we're a military family. My wife served for 25 years on active duty. I'm military dependent, both of my wife's grandfathers and her father and her uncle. This ad came up, and I sat there and I watched this. We don't have to hear the whole thing, but this is for the Army National Guard, the reserves. Go ahead, Carl, let's play this.
We get how uncertain the future is. We've come of age in a complex world, face to face with problems we didn't create. So what's gonna happen next? We are. Because our future is the future. The life we have chosen has prepared us for this. So we're going to build bridges and hospitals in a day.
Okay. All right. Go. You get into there. I have a real problem with this ad for two reasons. Not the least of which is because it plays into the rampant paranoia, and the anxiety. They know, right? They know that we've never had a situation in America where our young people have been so anxious. Oh, and by the way, it's because of ads like this and the relentless sort of negativity and the helicopter parenting and, the government response to COVID and the tribalism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then there is the little bit here about problems that we didn't cause. Yeah, okay. You know something? In every generation, we're dealing with problems that other folks didn't cause. That's the way of the world. We are dealing with these things. Someone makes a dumb decision in the past, and it affects the present. Hey, yeah, that's the way time works. We can't work it backwards, ladies and gentlemen. But what I find so stupid and vaguely Orwellian in all of this is, oh, things have never been more uncertain. You've never been less in control of your own lives. So come and join the military, where you have zero control over your destiny, where you have to do whatever somebody else tells you to do. Even if you are a senior officer, you're essentially, following the orders of someone above you. So it's this bizarre sort of flipping reality on its head as an inducement here. Hey, guess what? If you're anxious in your world, You know, you're concerned about what's going on in the world and feel like you have no control over what's going on in the world? Well, come out and join our organization in which you will have even less control over your life. Oh, you know something? Yeah, your entire existence will be regimented 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You may do some. By the way, I want to be really clear about this. This is not, again, me poo-pooing the military and military service. I believe in military service. I believe in a volunteer military. But I don't believe you should sell the volunteer military by playing on the anxieties and sending them a bill of goods that somehow they can take control over their own destinies by joining the military. What we want, A, as a society, is to instill a sense of confidence in our young people. Oh, and uphold those institutions which instill that sense of confidence instead of tearing them down. Oh, I don't know, like everybody wants to tear away at youth sports and get rid of the aspects of competition within youth sports and other kinds of competitive impulses within within academia. You know, I want kids who are patriotic and who are joining the military because they are going to serve a cause greater than themselves, and they understand that. Oh, but of course we can't have that in America today because we believe that patriotism is garbage. I'm sorry. I know we don't all believe that patriotism is garbage. But there's a huge swatch of the media that does. You know, we've spent the last 50 years... The progressives have spent the last 50 years working overtime to destroy any impulse of patriotism and to fight for the principles upon which this nation stands. So this is what they're left with? Join us because it's going to assuage your feelings of anxiety by becoming regimented mind bots. Oh, and let's add to this, you'll be the victim of all kinds of social science experimentation when we come in, instead of learning how to defend this nation. Dumbest National Guard commercial ever. Listen, the next hour we're going to be joined by Adrian Buzzetti from the Bull Moose Project, my old buddy John Berlau from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Oh, and as we were talking about with Tony, the vice president spoke out over the weekend. Want to hear from you? Facebook.com/Andrew Langer Show. You can at me as well, @Andrew_Langer. This is Tony Katz Today.